This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's Health and Living, Paul Jay, clinical psychologist, in for his monthly show. And today's topic is an interesting one. It's to marry or not. Marriage and love are some of the things that humanity has been practicing and to some extent obsess over, more in certain time periods over another. Can this institution of marriage actually work? Times with times, things have evolved. We have also joining us together with Paul J. Joash Ko, a marriage counselor. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Joash. Good. Good to meet you, man. Hi. Hi. Good to see you again.
You've all never met. We've all not met, except for Paul and I, who've known each other for the longest time. Paul, I'm going to start with you. I mean, the institution of marriage, what does it mean today? I mean, it has evolved definitely over time.
Definitely. What it means today is purely subjective in terms of marriage. Subjective because it depends on cultural issues, religious issues, social issues like family patterns as well. But like I said, the functional term is changing. But marriage basically in the dictionary means the coming together of two or more people, or a marriage between businesses, a marriage between people. This is a happy marriage that's give and take and it's coexistential. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's definitely changing. And I think it's changing for the better.
Really? Mm. Okay. Joash, do you think the same thing?
Well, if I have to say it from my experience, I guess marriage would be more of a coming together of a union between men and women. Of course, nowadays, if we talked about there is the face of LGBT and issues like that, but classically and traditionally, marriage is still a honorable union between men and women coming together in such a way that is recognized on a social structure, a social legal structure, with all the legal rights and obligations between them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds very technical. And, you know, if you'd said this to me 20 years ago, I would not have gotten married because it's just far
too
much.
Has it been 20 already?
Yeah, yes, yeah. 20 years already. You know, it sounds big and huge, massive. But do you think the institution of marriage has changed today?
I believe everyone, I mean, as coming to times, there are changes. And I think people's views and worldviews have changed as well concerning marriage. Yes, probably they have different reasons why they want to get married as well. So the definitions of marriage may have changed along the way.
Okay. What are good reasons to get married, Paul?
just before I get to that one, you know, when you said the idea of marriage per se, it's definitely changed because for me, marriage also takes into account various other things such as the marriage license. It looks at marriage registration. It looks at common law marriage as well. So we've got a very broad perspective of marriage these days. But people marry for various reasons, all kinds of reasons. The best reason is because they want to be together and journey together. That's the best reason. Mm-hmm. And of course, they take the marriage vows, which I, in my opinion, psychologically, I say is a contract of insecurity. For better or worse, I promise.
All right. That's one aspect of it. Okay.
No, but it has changed. And some of the good reasons, the best reason I know is we have decided very sanely that we are going to be journeying together. Now, where you're going to journey and under what umbrella you're going to journey, that is the social aspect of things. It could be under the umbrella of a religious umbrella. It could be the umbrella of a nudist camp somewhere in town. Anywhere. So it has different rules. So where you are, basically, marriage is a normalized institution. It never used to exist before. It started off in Greece and in Rome way before many religions did it. And it became the norm. It became a law. And that's how it started becoming more and more ritualized. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Given everything that you said just now, Joash, I mean, we all aspire to this whole idea of being married till death do us part, and that is the other aspect of the vows that you take. But it doesn't seem to be the case for many. So did we always know it was going to be difficult that we had to commit to so much to make sure that things worked? But is that unnecessary pressure?
I have to say that I think a lot of people come into marriage and relationships with the misconception that relationships are easy, that, you know, you just jump into it and love will save us all. And that's what Hollywood's been teaching us.
Yeah.
But I think it's such a misconception because marriage requires a lot of hard work. Love requires hard work. And that's what, as marriage therapists, we try to explain to our clients that relationship requires effort from both sides.
Does marriage require love? Or does love require marriage?
It depends what kind of definition of love, how you see it. Yeah.
That's what it's after.
Yeah. So if you say if love is just feelings, then I would say that's just the beginning of love. That's just the chemistry of love. But love and sustained love is different altogether. It's more of looking at the emotional bond that you have between partners. And that's something you need to work on in the future. And it requires constant work between couples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you saying that for many of us whose marriages did not work, mm-hmm. there wasn't enough commitment?
Well, I would say probably, maybe my guess. I mean, to just say probably there wasn't enough awareness of what's going on. Probably there wasn't enough patience to stick it through. Probably there was too much hurts and pains along the way and it wasn't resolved. There's just so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would summarize that under people getting married at a certain point in their lives. Now, when you decided to get into a partnership, unfortunately, they throw this thing called human lifespan development right out the window. Individuals are still growing. But the biggest problem that happens in marriages, as I see, is that when you compromise and you declare your love for one another and you sacrifice to keep this unit going, you kind of compromise your own human lifespan issues. And then things change. People wake up to the reality that, hey, I'm lacking in this. I wish I could. My bucket list is getting longer. So as the human lifespan evolves, different needs are going to evolve. And if you're not growing together to realize this what I hate this word, compatibility. But if you don't begin to realize this incompatibility that's beginning to arise, that distance is going to grow. And when it grows, you start growing apart.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start thinking, right, this relationship is under strain. We've got to do something about it.
There was an Oxford study, Paul, that, you know, of a professor who did a study, and he found that, I mean, of course, we're all living longer today.
Yeah.
Life expectancy is going up by leaps and bounds, actually. So that would mean that we're going to be staying married, or we're expected to stay married for 50, 60, even 70 years now, if we're all living together.
Yeah.
Is that fair, though? Is that something that's workable?
Well, that's workable. Yes, it's definitely workable if you're both of one mind. But I've got a new, having been in practice for so long and seen people come and go and marry, pre-marry, divorce, remarry as well. My idea is, to answer your question bluntly, is it fair to be together for so long? My short answer is no. Because I feel that as marriage was part of your growth, so is growth in itself. Now, whether you want to maintain that marriage or grow individually, that's a choice that both of you are going to have to make. So the unfair pressures of this institution called marriage, or this piece of paper called the marriage certificate, I think that's got to change as well. As all of us change, as times change, as the laws are changing, just like when marriage was just a convenient law, you know. And then as one religion took over and it spread very quickly, it adopted this institution called marriage. It never actually devised it in itself. It was devised elsewhere. But my idea of a new form of marriage for the modern person is, my wife and I were talking about it recently. Now that the chicks are leaving the nest, we can start ticking our bucket list off. Do we stay married or shall we go our ways?
And very often that happens.
And going your ways doesn't mean divorce, but going your ways means you're redefining your marriage. Meaning, yes, I might be in Africa chasing lions, and Sarah might be flying a kite somewhere doing something else. She wants to go dancing and stuff. And we may not even be together. But the whole idea has metamorphosed. It doesn't mean we're not in love. It does not we disrespect each other. But marriage must, the whole relationship must evolve. And the more it evolves together, the lesser problems we'll have with it.
Joash?
I just want to quote something that there's this study called Terman Life Cycle. I think you're very familiar with it. So this cycle is one of the longest studies about study on longevity of married couples, individuals, and divorce. And they started all the way when these participants were 11 years old, and it started in 1921. So what was the result of this study showed that there's two groups of people that live the longest. First is those who got married and stayed married, and the other one was those who stayed single and remained single.
Okay.
So to just add on to what you said, and you said, you know, that couples are to evolve together.
Yeah.
And I have to sort of agree with that, that as you grow through different seasons in your life, couples would have to talk to each other, would discuss with each other, would dream dreams with each other and plan plans and come to help and support each other, realize each other's own dreams.
I don't know whether each other need to be present. You see, like, I'm going scuba diving all the time.
Yes.
And my wife doesn't.
Yes.
So
does she support you?
She says, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So that so that's the support that I'm talking about.
Right.
So it could be like you want to do, you know, skydiving or something like that, and your wife is looking at teaching dancing, you know. Yeah. It could be something that as that. And you know how you would just check up on her on the end of the day and say, hey, my dive was great today. And it's just as simple.
No, I don't tell her. She doesn't want to.
Yeah, I don't think I really care.
No, but, you know, to add to your study of longevity,
yes,
having social support is the primary issue. That means you've got primary social support. And when it comes in the form of this sanctioned thing called marriage, close, intimate social support, yes, you do live longer. 100%. You're right. Mm. There is also another study to show that those who live longer together are not necessarily happier together. And the study there's a lovely professor, Lucia, from the University of New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. She suggested that people, males, 30 to 75% of males during their married life practiced infidelity. Mm-hmm. And 20 to 68% of women also did the same. Now, I mean, there are three kinds of lies, you know, lies, some bad lies, and statistics. Mm. But this issue of longevity and staying together, the question is, are they happy? Mm. Or when does it end? Functional happiness. Mm. And then we throw in this variable called children. And what formula do you then spread with the kids and what that does to the marriage per se? Yeah.
Okay.
So the marriage, and by the way, the marriage is not just between two people, right? It's about two families, maybe cultures, maybe more than that.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll come back and find out more about how do you keep the marriage alive, your expectations, how do you manage those expectations from the get-go, and of course, infidelity, Paul, since you've mentioned it coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's Health and Living, and today's topic with Paul J., clinical psychologist, is the case for and against marriage. Joining us also, Joash Ko, a marriage counsellor. We're trying to figure out whether or not this whole institution of marriage has evolved, you know, whether it's been grounded in the same principles. Have we strayed from them? And so on and so forth. Before we left off, Paul, you spoke about infidelity. That's quite a high number of both men and women.
Oh, very high.
Very high number.
Very high.
So what does that say? What does that say about us as human beings?
Okay. I could be breaking the rules for at least two reasons. One is a sexual reason. So I'm looking for a sexual partner or sexual satisfaction elsewhere. The other one could be an emotional issue. So both of which means you are deviating from your set basket and you're saying, I'm now looking for something else somewhere else. It could be that. However, this issue of infidelity is, they also suggest, psychological research suggests that it is hardwired into our brains to be infidels, to actually break the rules. And it's really hard to get your mind around that one because this goes all the way back to natural selection and Darwinism and even how turtles behave. For instance, it is better to be the 20th wife of a rich man than to be the only wife of a poor man. But that again makes us define what happiness is altogether. Mm-hmm. But infidelity is real. We can't talk about it. We can't ignore it, sorry. The other aspect of infidelity is imagination. Letting your mind wander and wondering, why couldn't she be this? I hope it was like that. Why did I ever get married? Or I should have married so-and-so when I had the chance. Now, for me, that would also fall under the bracket of deviance away from this relationship.
Okay. And there's a downside to both scenarios?
There's both downside and upside.
Okay. We'll come back to that. Joash, your thoughts on infidelity?
I have to disagree, Paul, here.
Yeah, please.
On that humans are
hardwired
to find or to be non-monogamous. I think there was a research done by Dr. Sue Johnson, and this was
this the Johnson and Johnson people.
No,
the company.
No, not the sex therapist.
Ah, okay.
This is Sue Johnson, the founder and the founder of emotionally focused couples therapy.
Okay.
And she did a research on attachment theory. And what she found was, yes, a lot of animals all around the world they are not monogamous. And only they say that there's only 7% of them are monogamous. And however, what she finds that because of the way we define love, the way we define bonding with each other, and the way we see how we need each other, that we fall in that 7% category. Humans, innately, we have this desire to live with one another forever. That is how we are built, that we have this. So she went and did, she was talking about how we have found that oxytocin is only in most mammals, and these mammals that have oxytocin are monogamous. These hormones that we have helps us to maintain the fidelity that we have with each other, even though it's you're right, there's affairs on the rise, and I think it's just hard to just classify that we are one or the other. But I think that innately we are more monogamous than other types of animals or other types of
But then if you go back very far, far back, and you look at kings all over the world, they had concubines.
Yes.
Hey, Abraham had two wives.
Them.
Solomon had 700.
Yeah,
yes.
And then in some cultures, polygamy is perfectly acceptable.
Yes.
So what does that say?
I think that's just their lifestyle. And that's a different model from all of us.
So it has evolved.
Well, I would say that even though, yes, there's outliers as well. You see outliers as well, that kings and wealthy people and people who are, like an example are the Romans. The Romans who are on the upper class, they have
the means.
They have mates and they have the mates that fulfill their sexual desires. But they still have one female, one wife, and one or two heirs. And that's it. They don't have... Their other children are not recorded. Their other children are not part of the family. They are not in that whole lineage.
But it's still polygamous.
It is still polygamous.
Yes.
And infidelity.
And I suppose that is cultural. I guess culture plays a huge factor into this as well. Look at Nepal, where the Tibetans in living in Nepal, they have polyandry, where women have
women
have multiple husbands, and that's common over there because
called adat prepate negeri sembilan. They practice that.
Carry on.
So I'm saying that culture does play a role to how they view marriage, and we're talking about marriage. But when it comes to love, it's a different ballgame altogether, and it's very hard if we sort of mix these two together and say that, so if we can marry a lot of people, then it means we love many people, which is not really true.
Can love evolve?
I think that we have discovered more and more about love, what love and the science of love is. And we find that love is about one person and another person. It's just two persons. We are meant to be monogamous.
Okay, hold on a minute. I wanted to go back to, you mentioned Nepal.
Yes, yes.
You know this issue of polygyny?
Yes.
Okay, there's polygyny, there's polyandry.
Yeah.
Do you know the laws of monogamy only came into Japan in 1880? 1880.
That's very recent.
China, 1953. Mm. In India, 1955. In Nepal, 1956. Right till then, polygyny was allowed.
I think it's still allowed in Nepal.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But this is when at least the parliament signed it.
Right.
And the idea behind polyandry, which is very interesting, polyandry means one woman having many husbands, was when there was a shortage of men, especially during this warring nations, when there was a shortage of men and they needed society to propagate, women would actually look at, this man is a solid man, he's a strong man. If I have his genes, my children will survive. And so she would give birth to his. And then she'd find another man or another man. It's all about both natural and genetic resources. Mm-hmm. So that's how that became about, that arose that way. That's why turtles are doing that. They mate with several males and they keep the sperm and then they decide which sperm is most viable after some time. Similarly, the extension of that is how we behave in exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's called natural selection,
I'm talking about all this mating behavior, but we bring down that into a social context where we have several boyfriends and girlfriends at the same time, all saying hello, going here, having makan here, film there. And then we decide which is going to be the best mate and which is going to propose the better future for us. Then we decide on that mate. Now, that's the contract we sign after that. So it's still that hard wiring of we need to survive. Who's going to give me the better chance of survival? Mm-hmm.
What's coming to my mind now is this whole idea of contract versus biology. Mm. Does it even come together, really? Are we forcing it? Are we forcing the contracts on the fact that we're made a certain way?
That I support your notion of love.
I think that to grow love into a mature level of love can only be in a secure environment as marriage. Other than that, love could never grow. And that's how I see it, that without a secure kind of environment, without a place where couples could explore and grow, other than marriage, there are no other kind of legal institutions or social institutions that provide couples to do that kind of exploration.
So then does divorce become an option? Then no longer that happens. When my wife says, sorry, you can't go diving anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I stop her from dancing. And then we kind of get so bad and irritated, we stop loving each other. Does divorce become an option?
I feel that divorce is so quick with people nowadays. And that's my view as a marriage therapist, that because what we've learned from the media is, you know, if things don't go your way, just quit, just decide, just protect yourself. And I think that this is what we are hardwired to do too. We are hardwired to protect ourselves, and that's okay. But the question is, when you do that just too quick, when you do that just too fast, and you lose patience with so then you will not be able to know if this could work for you in the future.
What is quick, Joash?
Quick is when the first or second argument happens and, you know, you throw divorce on the table. And that, to me, that's quick.
Mm-hmm.
Or there isn't other exploration of options as well. You know, have you talked to her parents or your parents, or have you explored with people who are more mature in managing this issue?
What do you find
have
out?
Have you talked to other marriage therapists?
What do you find out that he gave you AIDS? Is that too quick? Or you have a picture of him sleeping with another woman? Is that too quick? So it's not. I don't think what you mean is frequency, intensity.
I think that it's hard to nail down where is the point for marriage, and I think that's one thing I have to make it clear that it's really difficult for me to nail down where is the point or how much does he has to hurt you before you quit.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone has different levels of
tolerance,
patience. So it's hard. For me, I think that if you give up too soon, if you give up too fast, then that's the decision that you've made. The consequence is divorce.
Okay, is that last statement of yours, mm-hmm. if you give up too soon, does this apply to people who are living together who don't have this marriage paper?
No contract.
They don't have this registration of marriage. So they're not married. They'll be living together. But does it mean I love her any less than someone who's married? And does the responsibility is any lesser between unmarried people?
So we are talking about couples who are not married, but they are living together.
Cohabiting, yeah.
Yeah. I think that their love is, yes, as equally as intense. They could be as equally intense. I actually, it depends on what are they looking in their relationship. If they are looking for a future.
But do they need to have this married? We are a married couple or we are living together. Does it make a difference in terms of their love, their respect, their tolerance, their...
I think...
Till death do us part?
I think, yes, I would think so. And it comes back to what I said earlier about growing in your maturity of your love to each other. You need some sort of environment or institution to protect that partnership between two people. And without that, it's not impossible, but it's going to be a difficult path ahead.
I would love to have known Japan before 1953, actually. I would love to peek into society and see how they functioned.
But all my friends, like my acquaintances these years, I know people who are unmarried who are more effective loving each other than people who are married. The effectiveness of how they love, and they have kids, by the way, as well.
Yes.
Their levels of separation mm-hmm. are far less in frequency. Now, this is my sample only, mm-hmm. than those who are married. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how that happens. And I don't think it's because of that piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing to do with society forcing the pressure on them. But it's still their major decision that they make individually. And they're in it. They're still in it, you know.
I think those are really good friends that you have that really has good values. But I think in the US they have done quite substantial research on cohabiting couples and what the outcome of those, especially cohabiting couples who are practicing marriage or trying out marriage or seeing if marriage works for both of them, and the results are not good. The results are generally unfavorable once they start cohabiting. I think the numbers were like 50 to 80% of these couples may break off after they are married. And that's the scary numbers that I'm worried, because I think that people should know that if you try out or stay together and try out marriage before marriage itself, mm-hmm. There's this risk that you need to know. There's this risk that there is out there and it's already well researched.
But maybe all married people who are planning to get married should know that there is a risk anyway.
Oh, yes. That's part of marriage preparation.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But how many cars do you test drive before you buy one?
When do you know you found the right person?
Yeah, I mean, and how do you test it, of course?
This, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And then are you not allowed to change your car model once you find out that the model is lousy? Inefficient. Now have we got hybrids? I wish I had a hybrid wife, you know? Consumes less of fuel.
Yeah. I wish wives are that
like
easy,
cars,
right?
Yeah. Or husbands, for that matter.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, then I could like just buy a... modify it or something, like go faster.
Oh, you heard him.
So how do you find that right person? And sometimes you're so hung up trying to look for this right person.
He runs some nice premarital courses. Mm-hmm.
So I started off counseling with premarital counseling. That was my first clients, and that got me hooked into counseling. Counseling is quite different. Premarital counseling is quite different from regular sessions. And what it is mostly more of educating the couples to know what the couples are, you know, what their issues are, or what kind of personality they are, and whether or not are they You know, do they know each other's values and principles, and how do they see certain topics in their life, and like communicating, do they communicate well, do they resolve conflict well? So I run with them, and what I usually do is I give them an assessment, is prepare and enrich, and this assessment is very comprehensive. It covers over 20 over areas, and the couples would answer questions, and the more answers that they put in, the computer would generate more questions to tailor their specific strengths and growth areas, to find out where exactly their strengths are and to give an accurate report of where they are. So after the assessment, I will do a feedback session with them, and I'll go through with them their growth areas. Then they will decide, you know, oh, okay. So there are a lot of awareness for couples after they do premarital counseling.
But as Paul said, you know, people grow.
Yes.
People change over time. So
that's
do you suggest that people relook this every now and again?
Yes, I would encourage that. Yes.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do it every year.
You do hopefully, it every, hopefully not.
Not every year is bad. Every day. Every day before you sleep, do your accounts. Do the books balance. I was going to add on to what Joyce said, that when I run my premarital kind of thing, but we don't call it premarital, people who are interested in each other and who are serious about the relationship, I take them through various exercises, both in the water, out the water, on the sand, in the jungle, in different locations, and I challenge them on various aspects of growth and individual growth and how to start discovering and picking up signs and signals. Yeah, so it's more of a, not a clinical, but it's a preempting of challenges and how we resolve issues, your resolving styles. Some stay together for life after that. Some have split and decided, no, I'm not going to buy this model.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. We're discussing to marry or not with Paul Jay, clinical psychologist, and Joash Cole, a marriage counsellor. When we come back and find out more about, is marriage really suited for everyone? Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. If you've just joined us, welcome. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's Health and Living. Paul Jay, clinical psychologist, in the studio for his monthly show, together with Joash Cole, a marriage counsellor. We're discussing the case for and against marriage. I think we've spoken enough about cohabitation. We have spoken about monogamy, polygamy, polyandry, the works. And now I want to ask Joash, is marriage suited for everyone?
I have to say that no, not everyone is destined to be married. Then that's my view on it. I think this will go into whether or not does marriage make people happy. But I think that all of us have our own destiny. Some of us are destined to be married and stay married. And hopefully you work on your marriage to stay married. Some of us, and I have friends who are single and they are happy being single. They have very fulfilled lives being single. And to me, that's fantastic. That's how it is. That's how it should be. That we are destined. We all have our own destinies to achieve, to go to.
Misconceptions, Paul. Funny, Joash said some of us go into marriage thinking that it's going to make us happy. That, I think, is one misconception, don't you think?
Well, that's a very big misconception. We live happily ever after, that's one of the biggest misconceptions. The other misconception is you are the one and only for me. Because what happens in a lot of relationships is they start living in each other's pockets and they write off the world around them. Because my marriage gets richer after having met you and my friends, and I bring home this value added to the relationships. So this idea of you and I and nobody else, as in, of course, not having affairs, but cutting away from friends, reducing your social circle, reducing your work levels, reducing your time alone and outside, developing yourself. No, marriage is not. That's one of the biggest myths that destroys marriages. For me, the number one myth that destroys marriages or any relationship is silent expectations. We have silent expectations of the other person without discussing things, and we have something called silent assumptions. Now, these two things are the biggest killers in relationships. And one of the myths is we don't always have to talk about it. And the biggest excuse is, you know I love you, I don't have to tell you. Mm-hmm. But this expression of love, multisensorially, by the way, I love that word, psychedelically express your love for the other person throughout. That's important.
Okay, how do you overcome that? Or if you are conscious, you're doing that, how do you start getting out of it?
No, the big, like he said, that one of the biggest words he used was getting educated about it. So this getting a notion of what's going to be involved or what could be involved, looking at other couples, reflecting, talking to other couples, learning from the strengths and weaknesses of your own father and mother and aunties and uncles. They all add to this library of yours that becomes your reference bank. And the only way to overcome it is to develop awareness of yourself first. Do not expect anybody else, including your spouse, to change if you're not going to change. And developing that self-awareness is the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. Is it ever too late?
No, it's never too late. It's never too late. I think that we all grow and we all change constantly. Daily we change. And I think couples would have to be open to change as well. And couples who stay stagnant or couples or individuals who stay stagnant in a relationship will usually find difficulty to move forward. Yeah.
And to add to that, this, I'm sure Joesh is going to disagree with me on this one. I think they should be so open to change and development that they should be able to change the notion of their relationship. I think it's time we both lived apart and see if we grow and realize and love one another again. So some of the things that happens is in the courts send me a lot of people in divorce and custody care and control matters. And some of these issues is try living apart for a little while, discover yourselves again. Try taking some time apart. Get your bearings right. Put on your GPS and see where you're located, for starters. And then we'll see where we go. But this whole issue of keeping your options open and knowing what's at risk. What are you going to lose? What are you going to gain? And let the balance weigh itself out, but make sure you're the fulcrum.
There's always a huge mistake that couples make. I'm staying on. Mm. I know it's not working out. I'm staying on because of the children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then,
that's fairly common.
Then you find in the women in their late 40s one day just packing their bags and leaving. And, yeah. and you're wondering what happened.
Yes.
That happens all the time.
Yeah, that happens all the time in my counseling room. And I feel for these people. I really do. I really feel a lot of empathy for these people because they have swallowed the pain for so many years. They have just, you know, just kept it all inside of them. And when they found an opportunity to get out of that situation, naturally, you would jump out. Naturally, you do something to save yourself. But my concern, my message would be more of, you know, if you know there's problems in your marriage, you should speak out. You should talk to somebody. You should tell others, you know, I need help. We have this problem. He's doing something to me or he's hurting me or something like that. And that, and we have so much help nowadays. We have so many bodies and so many NGOs and all out there ready to give help in whatever capacity, legal advice or counseling. They are all out there. They're all ready to help. So I would say, you know, if you find that you have difficulty in your marriage, do speak up. Do speak up.
For me, the reports that I write to the courts or the lawyers always starts with this sentence, in the best interests of the child or children, then we decide. And my notion at the time is they're too young to think and feel the way they should. So what kind of atmosphere, what kind of environment, what kind of primary positive environment can we give? Do we want them to live within a negatively charged one or separate or positive or happy, happy, and then together? It's a difficult, there's no set formula. But once the judge is educated, they make the call. Mm-hmm. And once the parents are convinced that they've turned every stone, then they make that kind of decision. But, in the best interests of the children. Sometimes your daughter needs to know she mustn't stand up for abuse for 20 years. She needs to be empowered. Your son needs to know that he cannot raise his hand because his father does it regularly. So things must change immediately and as quickly as possible.
Joesh, we tend to think that being married to one person forever is actually marital success. Is it?
In my definition, no.
So it's not just whether diamond or jubilee.
No.
Or gold.
But it does really look really good if you're married to the same person for 80 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, it does really
look
really good.
How many people actually achieve that?
Well, my grandparents did.
I think a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do live together, but they live together, full stop.
Happily don't know.
Exactly. And so I guess to define marriage success, I would say that you have grown with each other. Each other has grown in their love for each other. The bond between each other has grown. You sort of know each other's emotions and in tune with each other so well that, it is possible that you are able to support each other's dreams and plans. And I think as you walk to each other and as you grow with each other, you may even have the same plans and dreams for each other to support each other. So yes, maybe even your wife may support you in your
Scuba diving.
Yeah, and she says, she would cheer you at the side and say,
she supported so much, she allowed the children to do it too.
Yeah, see? Yeah. And she gave you, say, spend all our money, go ahead.
Hey, don't get that. Don't go that. Go to Ash, don't go there.
Yeah, but that's the future. That's coming on, right?
Yeah. Paul, earlier on you spoke about the down and upside of infidelity. Yeah. You said sexual is one, and there was another one.
Emotional.
You want to go through the downside and upside with me?
Oh, the downside is you're breaking the rules. The norm, the set rules. You are being unfaithful, disloyal. However, I've seen people who have crossed that line and come back much stronger. And I always believe that a sinner is stronger than a guy who doesn't know what it is. And people reject. I'm not encouraging anyone to cross that line here. But if you're not married, well, test drive as many cars as you want to. However, for those who have broken this law of infidelity or fidelity, many people have come back stronger for it. They've learned all kinds of lessons. And some have realized that they've made a mistake in the marriage in the first place. And they actually need to forgive themselves and liberate the other person. Because in many marriages, I see one person keeping the other person in a cage, a pet dog in a cage in a condominium. That's the worst kind of analogy I can give you. Because traditionally, till today, unfortunately, there's subjugation of women and wives. And when that happens, I'm always anti, very empowering. And I would say, listen, things need to change very quickly. I want to get rid of the cage, move you out into a house with a huge compound, run free.
Okay. Joash, would you agree with him?
I would say that there are downsides to infidelity, and all of us know that. You know that's hands down. Everyone knows.
You're breaking the contract. Yeah.
You endanger the relationship, and there's this term in psychology we call this. You cause injury to the relationship, injury to the attachment that goes so deep inside, that broke so many layers of trust and commitment. Wow. That it's really hard
to rebuild it.
And that's. That's what I work with, because infidelity or affairs will cause that. That's full stop. It will cause that. And I would have to, start rebuilding from there. Say, are you sure you want to work on this? This is the path that we're going to hit. It's going to be different. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be long ahead. So do you want to do this? And a lot of times I sort of like bring it to them and hope that they would agree to actually work on their relationships.
Is it forgivable?
Well, in my experience, I have seen couples overcome it. I have seen couples overcome it and they grow stronger, a lot stronger. But I've seen couples too, at the face of infidelity, in the face of affairs, they just give up. It's true, because it's just too painful. It's just the hurt is just so deep.
If it's painful and so deep, the word giving up sounds negative.
Well, giving up would mean that because it's just too painful to continue on this path of reconciliation and forgiveness. It's just too painful.
So amputate, cut free, zoop, start life again.
Yes, sometimes that's the choice.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes that's the choice for some couples.
So how does one not give up on love and marriage? Infidelity aside, Paul, how does one not give up?
Try, and try again. If at first you don't succeed, love and marriage. For me, the word marriage doesn't exist. I replace the word marriage with relationship. And you can tuck in the word relationship under so many umbrellas. So if you want to tuck it under this thing called marriage, you may. If you want to tuck it under cohabitation, you may. If you want to tuck it under, you know, my lifelong journey, we're going to travel and dive together and all the dive sites. Yeah, you may do that as well. But the whole issue is working at your relationship regularly. For me, that's how. That's the main thing at developing a relationship. Forming, maintaining, and forming, developing, and maintaining it. That's the most important skill you should have.
Hard work, isn't it?
No, it's not that hard work. A lot of people say it's hard work, but if you're honest with yourself and you're honest with the other person, it's actually, you don't sweat. And there are hurts, there are pains here and there. It's like knocking your elbow against the chair once in a while. You'll smart for a little bit. But it's not that hard work. The hard work comes in your self-awareness of and the being true to yourself. That's the hard work.
Joash, how would you leave us with a message to people who are planning to get married? A very realistic message as far as marriage is concerned.
Well, for people who are looking to get married, I would say that, like Paul said, that you are supposed to work on yourself, look at yourself, look at your inner strengths and find out what are those, what are the areas of your inner strengths, your inner beauty, your inner values, your principles that you have. A lot of people are ignorant of who they are. They just think, oh, okay, I'm just going to get a beautiful husband or a beautiful wife and that will solve all problems as long as I'm attracted to him or her. And that's the worst kind of marriage to start with. So to know who you are, that's number one. Number two is you need to cultivate yourself as well. If you want a loving, kind, caring partner, do that. Be that. Be that kind of person. And generally, you will find people of the same values that are attracted to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's usually true.
Yeah.
And I would say finally that if you are planning for marriage, if you found a partner, do ask for help. Seek wisdom. Seek knowledge from people around you, those who have gone before you. Yeah, ask them, what are the tips? What should I expect? And things like that.
There's tons on Facebook every time.
Yes.
Yeah, the one thing that, all the people share in a marriage, it comes down to the one thing, Paul. Mm-hmm. And that is respect.
Yeah, self-respect first.
Yes.
But I need to give a message also to single parents, those whose marriages have failed or died or widowed, and people who are single by choice. Being single or being a single parent does not mean you have to be lonely. Now, if you're not lonely and you have a buddy and you've got a balanced diet for your children, there's a man in your life or uncles, brothers, sisters, your child will have a balanced diet. But make sure you have a balanced diet too. Go out there, have friends, grow up as well, have a great time. But the one thing that I'd like to leave is take your time. Take your time. Mm. Sometimes a 25-year-old marriage is not the measure of a marriage. Sometimes people who are married for 1 year have such richness in something that you can learn from.
Thank you, gentlemen, for sharing your thoughts with me today. That was Paul Jay, clinical psychologist, and Joash Koh, a marriage counsellor, on the case for and against marriage on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.